From AI to telehealth and even the mobile phone camera, technology is reshaping how we practice. I'm Dr. Steve Vargo, and this is the Iona Business Podcast. Stick around as we explore the opportunities and threats presented by these innovations and discover why positioning yourself as an influencer is key in this rapidly evolving landscape. Stay tuned for my conversation with the insightful Travis Beaven. Hi, welcome to another episode of I Own a Business, where we focus on helping practice owners build the practice of their dreams. I'm your host, Dr. Steve Vargo, and I have with me Travis Beaven. And Travis, I'm going to ask you right out of the gate to grade me on something. You gave me a very impressive bio that I wanted to use for an intro, but for the sake of an intro, sometimes with you super smart techie guys, it's hard to simplify what you do. You guys use a lot of big words I've never heard of before. So this is my attempt to simplify your experience and expertise. So let me know how I do.
Sounds great.
Travis is a software and digital disruption expert with 30 years of experience. He's worked with major Fortune 500 companies like Microsoft, Disney, and Toyota. Now at Alcon, Travis focuses on creating user-friendly experiences with cutting-edge technology, and he's dedicated to transforming healthcare into a doctor-friendly ecosystem. How'd I do, and what do you want to add to that?
No, I think that's great. It's always a little embarrassing hearing yourself described in that way, and it's just funny. But I think that encapsulates it really well. A lot of buzzwords in there. But that really sums up the last 30 years of my life. And I'm very thankful that I'm getting the time to talk to you today and all of your listeners.
Yeah, this will be fun. And I think it's going to be a really interesting topic. We're going to talk about technology and disruption. And obviously with your background, you bring a lot of expertise to that area. On that word disruption, I'll tell you the first time I heard the word disruptive technology, it sounded so negative and invasive to me, but it's really innovation.
It is.
And it's necessary. How do you define disruptive technology within the context of an eye care practice or the eye care profession?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you said it right. I mean, disruption to a large extent is inevitable. It's going to happen based on a number of different technologies and experiences. And in many cases, it's more the experiences and the technologies that lead to the disruption. And every industry goes through this in different ways. We've seen it happen in a major way with mobile phones, if you remember the flip phone to the smartphone. We've seen it in hospitality. If any of your listeners here have flown recently, you probably have not printed out a paper ticket. You're just doing this on your device. All of these things, which seem kind of trivial to our lives, are disruption. And you know, we see the benefits of those. At the same time, there's companies that get on the wrong side of disruption. And so when we look at healthcare and in particular eye care, there's a lot of tech and a lot of experiences coming out around messaging, around how to stay connected between doctors and patients, around using the camera on the device. All of these things are going to be disruptive. The choice is really ours of whether we want to harness that and use it to drive our business forward, and in some cases, get to a better experience. All of us would much rather pick our seats on our phones rather than, you know, print out a ticket and deal with a line. So disruption can be good if you harness it the right way. And I think within eye care, a lot of these technologies are going to make that doctor-patient experience better, are going to make the conversation stronger and smarter. But left unharnessed, they can certainly change the way we work in a negative way.
How do you stay on the front end of that? Because when we look back at how we practiced 5 years ago, 10 years ago, things were so much different, but change is inevitable. It's progressive, it's consistent, but a lot of times it's very slow as well. So sure. We're in an industry where a lot of healthcare professionals, I think, who own their own practice, which is where we primarily, our business is primarily exists, there can be a sense of being slow to change. And I remember the terms from business classes, leaders and laggards, right? Leaders take charge of things. Laggards, in many ways, wait for the world to change and then adapt to it. And sometimes that means waiting too long. So How can care professionals navigate this adoption and integration of some of these disruptive technologies? And then we'll get into a little bit more about what those disruptive technologies might look like, but maybe just from the standpoint of how do we embrace that in an industry that sometimes our practice owners are a little slow to embrace change?
No, it's a great question. And I think, you know, as people are trying to wrap their heads around disruption and how they forecast it and how they think about it, I think the mistake a lot of people make is that they think in terms of tech. They think I need to become an engineer or a digital expert in order to really predict this. But the reality is the better way to do it is think about your current experience in the practice. Think about when you talk to your patients, think about how you communicate with them, and look at the areas where it's frustrating, where, you know, as you think about other experiences you're having in your life, what parts of your practice feel outdated and feel old or feel like it's taking 20 steps to get something? And you've found a way to work around that because that's just the way it is. Well, those are the things that are going to get disrupted. Those are the parts where, you know, if 20 doctors are frustrated by something, you know, 19 may just learn to live with it and figure out an optimal way to get around it. One person is going to say, I'm going to tackle this and completely change it because I'm tired of living with this bad experience. And so when you think about disruption, think about the experiences that you have. A really obvious one for eye care right now is a lot of the messaging. We see a lot of practices still using email as the primary mode of communication. Well, people are not communicating that way anymore on a regular basis. They're using chat. They're using text messaging. That sounds like a very small change, but it's actually substantial if you think about how you're going to market, how you're going to communicate, going from what could be a long email to a quick text message. Those are the things where getting better access to your patients, that's going to be the stuff that's going to get knocked off. And then we'll go more into the technology, but I always tell people, if you're trying to forecast the future, look at the things that are really frustrating for you right now. Look at the things that are annoying. Those are the things that are going to get altered. And, you know, whether you want to alter it and drive it or leader or laggard, one way or another, get your head around how those things are going to shift, and don't make your business around, you know, putting up with bad experiences, because maybe you get comfortable with it. Your patients certainly won't.
It's interesting when you say, look around the practice, see what's not working, because there's something to be said, I suppose, for disrupting yourself. Mm-hmm. That's what a lot of companies do, is they just look for the areas that need disrupting. What are the inefficiencies? What are the pain points? Let's disrupt that. Like I said, initially, I looked at that word as something negative, but it can actually be something very positive when somebody, an innovator, an entrepreneur comes along and says, that's not working. I have a better mousetrap. That's really what disruption is all about. Now, there's negative aspects of it as well. But we also have to consider the consumer expectation side of this as well, because people are going to get comfortable with other practices, other businesses doing things a certain way, perhaps a better way. And if we're not doing that, we're not keeping up with what other people are doing, we'll get behind. You used an example that I've used a similar example before with my kids. If you want to see what, I've got two teenagers. If you want to see what the world is going to look like, what the future is going to look like, pay attention to what your kids are doing. I got a 17 and a 15-year-old who don't know a world without the ability to get almost anything they want at the touch of a button, right? Meet your next generation of consumer. So we almost have to stay on top of these things, or you'll just, again, become that laggard that just falls behind.
For sure. So, yeah.
What technologies are we talking about? Would I, you know, there's, you talked about messaging, AI. I think we're just on the forefront. I know AI has been around a long time, but I think it's just really hitting the public now. But what are some of the technologies, if you could drill down a little bit more into the specifics?
You bet. Well, messaging is definitely one, as we've talked about that a bit. I think that's one to keep eye on because there's still a lot of friction there. AI is an interesting one to predict because, as you said, it has been around for a while. It's now picking up a lot of steam. And why it's picking up steam is because the use case for AI is finally making sense to the consumers who can use it. You know, technologies for technology's sake usually does not drive change. It's when you can put a use case around it, when you can actually think of a scenario where this AI is going to help you. And definitely AI, machine learning, generative AI, these topics are going to come in our space in a major way. And in a lot of cases where those will gain traction is where they're applied to, you know, help with mundane tasks. Maybe it's as simple as the patient is coming into the practice, they're getting their routine exam, and there is ways we can use AI and machine learning to give the doctor more intelligence about that patient before they step in the door. And when they do come and sit down in the chair, it means the chair time is optimized. It means the conversation between the doctor and patient is more personal because you're not having to get a lot of these early questions out up front. I think that's where you're going to see AI really start to play a role of helping prep, you know, the practice and the staff. You know, the other technology I think is really worth keeping an eye on. And it's one of those cases where, you know, the scariest part of disruption for me is always where you have a company that unintentionally gets in the way of another business. And the mobile phone is a powerful device, and it's been disrupting lots of industries. The fact that we've now married a really powerful camera with the phone is something that all of us in this space should keep our eye on, no pun intended. You know, you're pulling that phone out and you're using Face ID to unlock it in a lot of cases. And the security around that is wonderful for the phone. It's literally looking at you. And, you know, as we saw going through COVID, we saw the facial recognition really center on the eyes because they were solving for people wearing masks. So all that means is we now are getting a lot of telemetry and a lot of intelligence around that part of your face, specifically the eye, to identify you. But if you think about the power of those cameras, it's able to do a lot more than the phone from 10 years ago was at when it was disrupting Kodak. It's now got the ability to really see not just kind of very, very close imagery into the eye. You know, a good macro lens can do wonders there. But also because it's looking at you, just like you're looking at the phone, it's looking back at you throughout the entire day. You're now starting to get a path of everything that's going on with that part of your body. So if you think about changes of eye color, change of how you're focusing, how you're blinking, all of this, that camera on the phone is going to disrupt our business. And that's probably the one that I think has the most potential to get a little out of control if we don't start planning and thinking about it now.
What about telehealth? Because that's another area that technology has impacted. And I think it's still relatively novel to eye care. It's been around a while, but the ability now to jump on a phone call with a doctor or to Zoom in, I know there's HIPAA compliance issues with that and systems that are HIPAA compliant, but do you have thoughts on how that might impact eye care?
I do. I think that a lot of practices are taking small steps into it. I think telehealth is one of those things that the practice and the doctor has to be comfortable with what that means. So just having telehealth, I mean, those tools are available today. There's actually lots of practices who have used Zoom or WebEx or any number of technologies to do remote exams, or at least somewhat of being able to connect with a patient that way. COVID, I think, made this move faster. Certainly a lot of practices adapted to it. But what's really got to happen with telehealth is the doctor has to be comfortable with how that works, both from a scheduling perspective and, you know, does the doctor really want to kind of do 4 hours in a row of, you know, teleconference with patients? A lot of them will not want to do that. So I think it's a tool in the doctor's toolbox is how I look at it. And it's a powerful one, but it's got to fit with the overall flow of how the practice works. And I think that, by the way, is true of almost all the technologies. It's got to fit with how the doctor likes to operate.
Travis, do you work much with the diagnostic side on the in terms of the clinical aspects? So I've had some insights into new technology that's out. What I'm thinking of specifically is visual field machines that are now have AI built in and can give the doctor a lot more information on the patient and what they're looking at based on a large volume of people. Do you have insight into that? And I'll throw out a crazy concept here that may or may not come to fruition, is the idea that someday doctors could be held accountable if they don't check AI before they make a diagnosis, because it's going to give the doctor so much information. So pretty futuristic second thought there, but I'm curious of your thoughts on that.
Well, I'm tracking it very closely for sure. And I have a lot of visibility into that work. I think, you know, there's a lot of questions that are going to have to get answered around kind of the privacy, the compliance, the security, the bar. I mean, in an interesting way, I think, and I mean, no disrespect to any doctor when I say this, but if you're having an in-person exam, your bar of quality is going to be lower in terms of what people expect from you than if a machine was doing it. That machine is going to be held to a much higher standard. I'm sure all the doctors listening right here have great quality and everything else. I'm not saying that, but there's going to be this bar where the machines are going to have to be just infinitely precise about what they're doing before there's any acceptance. And then after the acceptance will become a lot of regulation. I think as the patients become aware of the data that's being collected on them, there's going to be renewed calls for privacy. So you're seeing that a lot of that now, by the way, of just consumer understanding of their data and what they're doing. But we're just at the beginning of that journey. There's a lot of information that our devices that we use every day are collecting that people are unaware of. And far more than, I mean, even people who are well-versed in it are surprised when they learn some of what the devices are doing. If anyone is exploring with a watch, a smartwatch, or any kind of aspects to some of the health services, there's a lot of data that's being collected there, far more than you intend. And so I think there's a lot of legislation that's going to occur. There's a lot of compliance. We're going to have to get through all of that. I do think the scenario you just mentioned is likely, where when people are comfortable with the technology and when it's in place, it will become a little bit like the automotive industry, where some of this technology now became a requirement because it was able to add additional level of precision. But I would say we're quite a ways from there at the moment. And I think some of the privacy questions are going to get pretty murky pretty fast.
Okay. Two things you mentioned, and I'm jotting notes here down. Where are we at with privacy? Do we have a long way to go with that? Because that's got to be something that you come across as well. As we talk about some of these different disruptors, there's been a lot of focus over the past decade on privacy and healthcare. Are we still at a point where there's a lot of privacy issues that would potentially be an obstacle to some of this technology moving forward?
Absolutely. I think there's a lot of questions to answer. As I said, I think, you know, consumers, and I'll give you this example this way. When you buy a new phone, whatever the manufacturer is, you go through a T's and C's document that you look at, and chances are you don't look at it. I mean, if we're being honest with ourselves, most of us are just trying to get to the bottom of that page, hit accept so we can get to that phone or that computer or whatever we bought. And buried in that is a lot of information. But on top of that, software is changing constantly. A lot of these device makers are pushing updates out, you know, in some cases daily, to add new features, to take advantage of the software in a new way, to file patents, all of this work that they're doing, and it's creating new privacy questions constantly. And so what happens is when the consumers become aware that something is doing more than it thought it did, that they thought it did, there's an instant rejection. And so we'll go through that process where people are going to be frustrated with what's being collected. They're going to wonder where that data goes. There's going to be a lot of scary articles and news reports about who's using what. You know, maybe a device we have at home that, you know, we use for the weather. Oh, by the way, it's also picking up our shopping habits and turning that into advertising. So all those things have to kind of work their way through. And then there will be the demand and call for laws. In the news, I think there's not a week that goes by right now where there's some kind of bill or proposal in front of our government to talk about how we deal with privacy. So there's just a lot to be done there. It is going to slow down some of the innovation, because people are going to be nervous about what happens. And in healthcare in particular, we're going to be very, very careful. And you see, by the way, the device manufacturers trying to get ahead of this a little bit with the, we care about your privacy, we care about your data. Well, I believe them, they do. But at the same time, privacy and innovation tend to butt heads in a lot of cases. And we're seeing that play out. So it will be a while.
You mentioned the word acceptance before, and I think that's a big aspect of this issue. The doctor, healthcare professionals' acceptance of all this change, of all this disruption. So I hope I don't offend anybody here, but I'm going to differentiate between two groups. One we might call the more senior doctors that really came up at a time where there wasn't nearly as much change. Then you've got the younger doctors who don't know a world without all this change and disruption. I'm going to sit somewhere in the, I'm going to take a neutral ground right in the middle, because I'm not the younger generation. I don't think I'm the older generation quite yet, but do you think there'll be more acceptance with the younger generation of doctors coming up, and there'll be less pushback on some of these changes?
The short answer is yes, but I do think it's a little bit more complicated than that. And, you know, I'll use this example because we hear this scenario play out quite a bit. And we're going through a change as a culture quite a bit where technology is concerned. And a lot of cases I hear people, particularly in this profession, say things like, well, I'm not very technical. I don't really understand technology. I don't like it. You hear these kinds of statements. And then, you know, I'll mention to them, so what kind of car you're driving? And they say, well, I'm in a Tesla. It's like, okay, well, you're in a smart car then, something that is getting updates. You're comfortable with that. Your knowledge of how to use that car, how to configure it, nobody came over to your house and sat through and walked you through an owner's manual or user manual of how you're going to do this. Everybody I talk to has an iPhone or an Android device, and they're using that. And at no point when you download an app does anybody come to your home and explain how to use it. You're having to learn it yourself. So the reality is, you know, regardless of age, people are actually far more adept at the tech than they give themselves credit for. And the interesting nuance there is the technology I just mentioned, your phone, you know, the car, a lot of that stuff really preferenced user experience. They made it easy for you to adapt to these things. And that's what all of us should be shooting for as we're coming up with these solutions. The technology is a barrier. You know, I mentioned some of the places I've worked with in the past. Some of these companies got very excited about the power of the processor they have, or the hard drive space, or, you know, these tech specs. Well, the reality is consumers don't care. You know, young or old, they really don't care about those specifications. They care about the user experiences that come out of it. And so what I'm seeing is, as we've, you know, done a lot of site visits, talked to a lot of doctors, is even older doctors embrace this technology if the user experience is good. And in some cases, I find that they embrace it faster than some of the younger doctors, because they've had many, many years of putting up with bad experiences. So when they see something that actually fits better, they're more likely to embrace it because they understand the pain of living with this for 20, 30 years. And so I think it's going to not be as clean as young and old as it's been in the past. I think it's really going to be how the technology lands inside the practice and the user experience it brings with it.
Yeah, that's a great point. A lot of these companies are built around how do we improve the experience for you and making it easier and making it very user-friendly. So, you know, I remember the first time I looked at my phone and I saw that my mom just friended me on Facebook. This world is changing. There's the generations, the gap between generations is starting to become less clear as technology has made things easier and easier for people to do things. What do you see regarding technology as some of the biggest opportunities? If we bring this together, and we've talked about some different technology that's out there, different trends. What do you see as the biggest opportunities? And then part two, what do you see as the biggest threats?
Yeah, absolutely. I think hopefully my answer gives a lot of heart to a lot of the doctors out there. And I truly believe this, and I've had lots of experience. You know, mentioned Disney, that's a company that thinks a lot about the people involved. And I think something similar is true in this space. The ability to connect between doctor and patient, the ability to have more ways to do that and more engaging ways to do that, I think is a massive opportunity. And I'll throw this is supported by a lot of data right now. You know, there's been this narrative that, well, patients just really want to get to this, you know, easy ordering, talk to a robot, not have to deal with a clinic, not have to deal with a doctor. They just, that's especially the younger generation, millennials, that group really wants to get to this automated world. But when you look into the data, that's far from the truth. A lot of this generation view, and this may be kind of funny to think about, they view the doctor as an influencer in a way. They want that human being in their life. They actually want to know that person is there. There's a lot of discomfort, particularly from the younger generation, around trusting all of this just to AI and a machine. The challenge is this group has also been curated to love convenience. And so when you think about some of the flood from, you know, going to the doctor, having that experience there, to going online, a lot of that has nothing to do with disrupting or getting in the way of the doctor. It has to do with, it's 11 o'clock at night and I just need an answer quick, and I want that convenience of easily ordering. Many of the consumers regret doing that because they feel like they're cutting out that influencer from their life. So I tell the doctors when I meet them, I'm like, you should think about yourself like an influencer. The people who come to see you want to come see you. Our job is to remove the friction in them coming to see you and how they connect and how they engage. So I think a huge opportunity here is, how can we make the messaging better? How can we look at telehealth? How can we look at all these different ways to have the doctor connected tightly to that patient in a way that works for them, rather than, you know, maybe call a practice, somebody writes it on a sticky note, they have to make their way, you know, at a certain time, and it's that those are become inconveniences. So there's ways that technology can round that out and get everybody what they want. Patient stays with the doctor, has that trust and feeling that there's a real human being helping them out, not kind of a faceless robot somewhere. That's the best of both worlds. And I think doctors should take a lot of heart, because the disruption that's coming, if it's handled right, is going to weight more in that direction. And I think that's great for everybody. You know, in terms of threats, I think, you know, it's we kind of talked about it a little bit. I think the data and the privacy and all of that is going to make this very murky. It's going to mean that a lot of solutions are going to get tried and blown up and tried again. And I think it's going to be confusing and it's going to be painful. And I think we're going to see a lot of software approaches have to be pulled back. And I think all of that is just going to create churn. So if you are running a practice and you're trying to keep up to date on things, we are in store for a lot of things that are going to waste your time, because they're going to be solutions that are just half-baked and do not work. You know, I think people are probably expecting, I'd say, something along the lines of remote diagnostics and AI kind of taking care of a lot of the exam services. Again, I think there's some logical tech in the future that will help this, but the doctor is still going to be there to shape it. So it's really kind of a call to action to everybody listening about how we want to harness this behavior and take advantage of it and use it to grow our practice and grow our relationship.
Yeah, a couple of things you mentioned, really interesting on the, I'd never considered that perspective before, but the doctor being the influencer. For some time now, doctors have not been the sole source of information for patients. I mean, there was a time where if the patient wanted information about their health, they had to go to their doctor to find out. The information is out there, but the ability to curate that information, I think, brings a lot of value from doctor to patient. I remember the first time a patient came to me with something they pulled off the internet, I was appalled, you know, get that out of here. But I soon realized that's the world we're going toward. And my role is no longer to dismiss everything they come in with, because a lot of it is accurate. It's just knowing what's accurate, what's valid, what's peer reviewed versus what's not. And the ability to sit down and say, okay, let me see what we've got here, and help them sort through that and curate it so they're getting accurate information. I think that's an area that a live human being still brings a lot of value. And you mentioned the connectivity part, which I love, and the ability to, that's evolving, the ability and methods in which we connect with our doctors. And for forever, right, doctors have been sort of this protected entity where you had to make an appointment and wait 3 weeks to come in and then sit in a waiting area. And again, as I look at trends and I look at my kids and their ability now to this telehealth movement, just to use that as an example, opening access to your ability to connect with doctors and changing the way, being able to challenge the way you think about things that have been done for a long time. I do think those are tremendous opportunities if you're willing to accept them, if you're willing to embrace them.
That's right. It's an exciting time. I think there's a lot of opportunities for doctors. And I think a lot of the kind of macro trends that have happened around, you know, there's more of a focus on eye health due to screens, due to a number of things that are causing eye strain or changes. There's frankly not enough optometrists out there, not enough doctors to support this growing need. So the technology will help those conversations. I love what you said. You know, we've all had the person who, they get anxious about a problem, they go to Google, it scares them more. And so, you know, we can't stop that. That's human behavior. They're wanting to an immediate answer. They're not going to wait 3 weeks to get an answer. So the opportunity is not to prevent them from doing it. The opportunity is to catch those moments where the patient got some answers, maybe it scared them, and you're there to influence, comfort, explain, put in context what it is that they've read. And that's going to build trust. And so that's how we need to keep positioning this space.
Well, Travis, we'll close out here, and this may just be you summarizing some of the things we've talked about, but I'm going to ask you to look into your crystal ball. And again, as we look back at the 5-10 years to where we're at now, we've seen people go online to make an appointment, telehealth, people wear sensors to monitor health conditions remotely. It's a different world than it was before. What do the next 5, 10 plus years bring? What do you foresee? And then I'm going to circle back with you in a decade from now, and we're going to see how accurate you were. But how do you envision the future patient experience in eye care settings with the integration of some of these disruptive technologies?
Well, I think it's around bringing intelligence in the right moment to the doctor, and then keeping that communication line open. I believe we're going to see a lot, this sudden boom of patient understanding that there's a lot of information being collected about their eyes and their sight, whether it's myopia getting kind of more press and more information, or around, eye strain on digital devices or whatever it happens to be, there's going to be more of awareness on the patient side. This is going on today. I hate it, but I think there's a lot more attention to, you know, what's going on with my teeth and I need to get to the dentist than what's going on with my eyes. And I think that's going to pivot a little bit. And so from there, I think if I'm looking into the future, what we should do is get more information about the patient before they ever step foot in the office. A lot of data is being collected. Rather than going to a cloud or to a tech company, we got to get that data to the doctor. So the doctor is a lot more informed before they start seeing that patient. That's going to personalize the care, and it's going to make it stronger, and it's going to make the outcomes both quicker and more precise. And then I think we start to disrupt what happens in the practice, because armed with this data, it means the doctor can have very different conversations, means the communication can be different in what happens during the visit and follow-up care, whether it's more embracing of telehealth, more embracing of just different types of messaging, but just everything gets more precise. And I think that those pieces are going to be the first couple of years where we're going to see people move there. And then from that, I think armed with more precise data and a better connection to the doctor, more personalized experience, I think then some of the treatments for some of these conditions will then subsequently change. You know, if you think about somebody getting fit into a new pair of frames or a contact lens, that first week to 2 weeks is tough. If you're not used to, putting something in your eye, it's hard. But if the doctor is there and they're utilizing tools to help them every day, every step of the way, this is what it's going to feel like. You know, on day two, it may be a little tricky to get it out of your eye still. Have you tried this? Kind of those moments, it's going to build that connection more to the doctor. So my crystal ball says if we do these things, what we're going to see is a tighter, better relationship between patient and doctor, as opposed to, I think, what a lot of people fear, which is the doctor getting disrupted and being removed. People don't want that to happen. And so as long as we use this technology in a clever and smart way, I think we'll build that relationship. It would be a real shame if the opposite happened. And I think that would be, the technology options were there, we just didn't take advantage of it.
Yeah. And I think we have an obligation to our communities to continue to stress our need and our value. So we do still fit into that formula, but then there's technology out there to support what we're doing. This whole conversation reminds me of something that somebody once told me. He said, you don't have to like trends, just don't ignore them.
Yes.
Just don't ignore them. So, well, thanks so much, Travis. Thanks for shedding light on these things. I hope what people take away from this is that change is inevitable, but embrace it. There's going to be things that certainly threaten the profession, but I think there's greater upside to all these changes, all these disruptors, than there are downsides. So we need to be diligent of the things I think we need to take a stand on. And I think as a industry, we have done that before, but at the same time, we can't dismiss everything that comes at us out of fear.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me on, and really for everybody. You know, don't be scared of this, and don't give yourself some credit. You're far more adept at technology than you probably realize. And so really think about those user experiences and how they can help you. And we definitely need the doctor in play. And I'm glad you're out there. And thank you very much for the time today.
Yeah. Thank you, Travis. And Alcon, you guys have been a great partner with us, with iDoc. So please peruse their website and keep up with some of these changes. You guys are obviously a very innovative company. So it's alcon.com, correct?
That's it. Yeah, no, we're here to support you, and we're here to help you with the decisions you make. Ultimately, you're steering the relationship with the patient. So everything we do and everything we build is really for you to decide on, and we're glad you're there.
Thanks again, Travis. And with that, we will close out, and I will just say thanks everyone for listening. And if you'd like more information about iDoc and how we work with ODs to help them grow their practice, you can find out more at our website, which is idoc.net. That's idoc.net. So thanks, Travis, and thanks everyone for listening.